Blog Talk Radio.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruption. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Detroit from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Hello, and welcome to Provocative Thought, intimately known as PT. Striving to awaken those who are asleep. Stimulate those who are awakened. Feed those who are starving. And nurture those who seek to know. I am your host, Carlton, a self-proclaimed student of light in the search, discovery, and revelation of life on life's terms. First, I'd like to thank We Talk Productions for allowing me to host this show. I'd also like to thank the creator for allowing me to be. You can contact the show by dialing 516-531-9540. Please press the number one to speak. Contact the show by dialing 516-531-9540. Please press the number one to speak. You can reach us on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to search, type in We Talk Productions, and listen to the show live. You can also contact us on Facebook at Provocative Thought PT Community Organization. Tonight's topic: feminism and black people. Feminism have its origin in racism? Should black women distance themselves from the feminist movement? One of the themes of the feminist movement is equality. So equal means the same. So in general, from www.coe.int/enweb. In general, feminism can be seen as a movement to put an end to sexism, sexist exploitation, and oppression, and to achieve full gender equality in law and in practice. Frequently asked questions about gender equality from www.unfpa.org. They say equality between men and women exists when both sexes are able to share equally in the distribution of power and influence, have equal opportunities for financial independence through work or through setting up businesses, enjoy equal access to education and the opportunity to develop personal ambitions, interests, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? So I guess a better word would be the same, you know, opportunities that men have, because equal sounds like you're trying to, it's like, I'm 6 feet, you got to be 6 feet. I have $6, you have to have $6. So that, I think what they're trying to say here is they want the same opportunities that men have, not less of an opportunity, the same opportunity. So what is meant by gender, which I'm not going to, we ain't going to get no big gender argument here, but these people say, in most societies, being a man or a woman is not simply a matter of different biological and physical characteristics. Men and women face different expectations about how they should dress, behave, or work. So, the roles that men and women play, and the expectations placed upon them vary widely among societies and change over time, right? But the fact that gender and sex, beyond research, mean the same thing, right? Attributes are socially constructed. Well, they mean gender roles are socially constructed, right? Because gender is not socially constructed. It's a biological, sex is biologically determined, right? So they're saying that the socially determined attributes of gender means that they also are amenable to change in ways that can make a society more just and equitable. So what is the difference between gender equity, gender equality, and women's empowerment? Gender equity is the process of being fair to women and men. To ensure fairness, strategies and measures must often be available to compensate for women's historical and social disadvantages that prevent women and men from otherwise operating on a level playing field, which we all know that gender is not the only barrier. But I'm just reading what the man is wrote here, right? Equity leads to equity. Gender equity requires equal employment by women and men of socially valued goods, opportunities, resources, and rewards. Equally, just you put the place the word same there, the same with the equality, right? The same, because it doesn't mean a woman gets six, the man gets six. It just means equal. So she has the same opportunity. She's at the job, foreman. She's been in for 10 years. The guy's been in for 5 years. She has the skills, more skills than that guy. Been in for 5 years. She's up for that foreman job. She qualifies. She gets it. Foreman. Bam. right? You see a lot of that going on. I think we got a police chief that's a female in Philadelphia. I think we have one in Chicago, too. So stuff like that occurs when you have more equality, right? Based on performance and you know, availability and, you know, whether you want the job, right? So where gender inequality exists, it is generally women who are excluded or disadvantaged in relationship to decision-making and access to economic and social resources. I know that's a, you can argue that because black men have a problem in this country too, right? And other nationalities. But this, today's topic is about, you know, feminism and sex and how things are discriminated against women. So I'll touch on some of the other stuff, one of, you know, but I can't get all everything in one show. It's only an hour and a half. So gender equality does not mean that men and women become the same. See, they just have the same opportunities. Only that access to opportunities and life changes is neither dependent on nor constrained by their sex. So they don't get the job because she's a woman. He don't get the job because he's a male. He don't know nothing, but they gave him the job anyway because he wanted God. We want a man up there. So none of that's going on. That's stupid anyway. I don't know anybody who run a business, put somebody in a position simply because they're male. That doesn't make sense. He's a male, the head of the fire station. He's going to get all his men killed, right? You know, head of the platoon, he's dumb as a doornail. Just because he's male, that doesn't qualify him to be a, your knowledge is what qualifies you, and experience and expertise is what qualifies you to do a job, right? How you perform at that job. So that seems fair to me. If she's doing the job, she should get paid the same thing a man would get paid doing that very same job, right? So achievement gender equality, they call it, this thing here requires women's empowerment to ensure that decision-making at private and public levels and access to resources are no longer weighted in men's favor. I just said that, right? So that both women and men can fully participate as equal partners in productive and reproductive life. And I don't know what that means because I know they're just having a big argument about that reproductive life. And I don't think this is from provocative thought. Men will never be an equal partner in women's reproductive life because a woman has sole authority over her body. You can't go up and tell a woman, she says, I'm pregnant. You can say, go get an abortion. I don't want to be a father. You can't go up and say that. She says, I'm pregnant. I'm going to get an abortion. And you can't say, no, had a baby. I want the child. You must have it. You can't do that. So you're never going to be equal in anybody's reproductive anything, right? Because their body, they have autonomy over their own bodies, right? She decides that she wants to have a child or abort a pregnancy. Whether you think that is right or wrong is beside the point. You're just talking about who has power over whose body, not making a moral, ethical judgment here, right? They go on to say, why is it important to take gender concerns into account and program design and implications? Well, they kind of answer that question in what I just said. There are clear patterns of women's inferior access to resources and opportunities. So unless that's written down somewhere that don't give this to a woman, that has to be the like racism, you know. It may not be written somewhere, but if you have a person who favors white folks over black folks, you're going to see a large percentage of white people get the job, get pay increases, get the shopsmith job or the head this or the head that. You'll see kind of stuff like that going on. It'd be hard for you to prove. Because they're going to say that he's qualified for the job and going to go by, you got the same credentials. They picked him. He just happened to be white. So, that could happen. Right? So they, same thing for women. They just want to be on a more even playing field as men. That's where I'm getting it. The word equal kind of throws things off because it's kind of like nobody's equal. that even two men aren't equal. Black men and white men, you know, we still have this problem, this issue with black and whiteness and racism in this country, so forth like that, right? I'm going to keep going. Wasn't it a group of black women who helped, what was the movie, John Glenn or somebody, they shot around the moon or something, the first trip around the moon, with a bunch of black women, mathematicians, right, teachers, that helped calculate that moon, that space trip, right? So people, like they say, real recognize real. You know, people recognize people they can, they need. You know, when you really get right down to it, they don't care what color you are, but they didn't get treated right. They, you know, the girl had to walk across the base to go to the bathroom, and they just didn't treat them right. But they were, you know, what was it, Taraji? Somebody, I forget the last name, Henson or something. I don't know. Anyway, y'all know the movie. What is gender mainstreaming? I don't know what that is. I'm going to skip that. Why is gender equality important? Well, I just told you, gender equality is linked to sustainable development and is vital to the realization of human rights for all, right? So gender equality puts people on an even playing field. Equality between men and women exists when both sexes are able to share equally in the distribution of power and influence and have equal opportunities for financial independence through work and through setting up businesses, enjoy equal access to education and the opportunity to develop personal ambitions, interests, and talents are reasonably for the home and children and are completely free from coercion, intimidation, and gender-based violence both at work and at home. So I guess somewhere somebody must be beating up women about a job or something. I don't know. Is that some old stuff? Within the context of population and development programs, gender equality is critical because it will enable women and men to make decisions that impact more positively on their own sexual and reproductive health as well as that of their spouses and families. As I said, I don't see how that works. Unless you have a woman who's that type of woman, and I don't know if that fits in with the whole feminine thing. Listen to your man going to tell you that you need to get an abortion. We can't afford a kid right now. Or you need to go and have this baby. And she's saying we can't afford a kid right now. She not making a moral decision here, just saying how, giving an example of how things go sometimes, right? So you may have that kind of, that you know, contraception. The woman might not want to take contraception. Might not make her feel good, might make her feel terrible, might make her not want to have sex, you know, so, you know, that's her body. Anyway, I think they were relating to issues also all over the world because they had this thing about contraception and resource to harmful practices such as female genital cutting. Now, I hope we don't do that in the United States. I heard about that over in some other countries. Stands to be improved with the achievement of gender equality. I don't think that has anything to do with gender equality. That's a cultural phenomenon there. And people have to come to the terms like, yo, you don't have to butcher people to make them better. You know, you don't cut people when you don't have to, when it's not saving their lives or anything like that. But some people have not come to that conclusion. They have their own reason for that, and we're not going to get into it. I read about that, but I'm going to keep it moving. However, it's important to acknowledge that there were gender inequalities exist. Yes, it's important to acknowledge gender inequalities exist, right? So, and generally, women are excluded or disadvantaged in relation to decision-making and access to economic and social resources. Now, here in the United States, we had a woman run for president. We have women heads of the police forces. Philadelphia has a female mayor, a black female mayor coming up. And so just women are in a lot of places now where they maybe 60 years ago weren't. Right. So they've made a lot of progress. So they're going to ask the question, is gender equality a concern for men? More equitable relationships will need to be based on a redefinition of the rights and responsibility of women and men in all spheres of life, including the family, the workplace, and the society at large. Somebody said we need to redefine what a man's role in a family is. Now, I think we've been doing that for a very long time, and I don't know what, I don't even know what that exactly they're talking about. I don't know if they're talking about the traditional woman stay home, man works. If that works in the family, that's his role and that's her role, take care of the kids, the house. So, you know, I don't know what that's supposed to mean because, I don't know, my mom worked, my dad worked. I don't know what's going on with that. So a lot of people, I've seen some stay-home moms. I've seen some moms work. I've seen some moms stay home and then work. So I don't know what this is talking about. I think it's dealing with the traditional roles of that whole thing. I'm the man. I go on, make the bread, bring the money back. You watch the kids. Which I think is a very honorable thing to do. Any being that doesn't want to care for their own children is, whew, is it a word for that anyway? Because I mean, you look at the animal kingdom, those guys are fighting to defend their children. They don't abandon their children. So, you know, they go hunting, they come back home, you know, so they always protecting that, the cubs. So it's a very noble thing to do. Men are often too expected to concentrate on the material needs of the family rather than nurturing and caring roles assigned to men. I don't know what that means. Assigned to men, nurturing and caring is just a human, a characteristic, attribute. So you have, if that's who you are, you're nurturing and caring. Some women aren't nurturing and caring. So women are thought to be more nurturing and caring, but the reality is that you are who you are, right? So men are expected to concentrate on material needs. That's going out. I got to handle the money, go get the food, pay the bills, get the clothes for the kids, for the wife, trip, car, bam. That ain't bad, really, if you can do that. If you can do that, hey, that's you, and you happy, ain't nothing wrong with it, right? So lifestyle that men's roles demand often result in them being more exposed to greater risk of morbidity and mortality than women, right? Well, if the job force is filled with more men than women, then, of course, you have those jobs out there that are dangerous, right? More men on the police force, you know, more men building bridges, climbing up 90 stories. I don't know if they have any women doing that, but anybody that does that, bless them. I hope they have wings. Anyway, men also have the right to assume a more nurturing role. Men have a responsibility to regard to the child's health and to their own and their partner's sexual and reproductive health. As I said, I totally don't see how you're going to tell a woman what to do with her body. You can talk all you want to the cows come home, but that decision finally at the end is hers. And she might base it on the fact that you don't want a child or you want a child, but the decision is hers. So the above statement represents the ideas of a group of women regarding a woman's ability to have equal access to resources or the same access, right? Necessary for their survival and to prove their quality of life. They call it equality, which means the same. Based on this theory, I thought, gender equality. The Bible are male dominant and female oppressive. From churchofjesuschrist.org, they said one of the interpretations of the for help meet, right, in Genesis, proposed by 18th century Bible scholar John Gill. Don't be beguiled by him being a Bible scholar. That's just what he does, right? Was that a woman's purpose as a helpmeet was to make man comfortable, to dress his food, be pleased in his sight, and be in all respects entirely answerable to his wants and desires. Now, I didn't even get that when I read Genesis. I don't know where this is, a guy scholar, and he got that from that. So I was like saying, So I kept looking. It wasn't that way in the beginning. So Genesis 1, 21, 24. And y'all know the story, right? Adam and Eve, right? We're just going to take this story for face value and just listen, because a lot of people are Christian, under the Christian umbrella, Catholic or whatever, Hebrew. And this story might have some shed some light on why men are dominant, outside of the fact that they're bigger than women and you just can't make them, you're not going to just make them do what you want them to do physically. You're not going to win that battle. Anyway, Genesis 1 to 24 says, and Adam gave names to the cattle and the fowl of the air and every beast of the field. But for Adam, there was not found a help meet for him. And the Lord God caused a deep sleep upon Adam, and he slept. And he took one of his ribs and closed up the flesh instead thereof. And the rib which the Lord God took him from the man, he made a woman and brought her unto the man. And the man said, now this is bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, because she was taken out of man. Therefore shall a man leave his father and mother and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. Right? So Genesis 2:18 says, and the Lord God said, it is not good that man should be alone. I will make him a help meet for him. So I said, what's help meet? What does that mean? Anyway, that's unusual, right? Help. We know what that means, meet, you know. So I went to the Church of Jesus Christ.org again. And they came, and that's not the only place I went. A couple of people had the same thing, right? But I used theirs. They said the phrase translated as help meet comes from two Hebrew words, Ezer, E-Z-E-R, and Kenedo, K-E-N-E-G-D-O. Ezer means help, but in a distinct way. In English, helper is sometimes thought as someone in a low position, but Ezer describes strength. It suggests that the individual has power to rescue others. Ezer is used 21 times in the Old Testament, always describing a person with the capacity, allowing one to help, protect, and aid. Help, protect, and aid. In most of these cases, Ezer describes the way God offers help to rescue mankind. For example, for the God my father, he said, was my help, Ezer, and delivered me from the sword of Pharaoh, Exodus 18:4. Happy art thou, O Israel, saved by the Lord, the shield of thy help. Ezer, right? So he's talking about the Hebrew word, right? You do know that Aramaic, the Bible is written in Old Aramaic, which is akin to Hebrew, right? Thus, it seems that through, this is from womeninthescripture.com, it says, through imprecise translation, our understanding of the powerful words used originally to describe each role have been diminished. As a result of our understanding, or Mother Eve has also been diminished, right? Suppose we all had been taught to understand Genesis 2:18 as something like this, that she said, it is not good that man should be alone. I will make him a companion of strength and power, who has a saving power and is equal with him. Right? So help meet is ordained by the Creator, made for the man. Then something happened in Genesis 3:1-19. Something happened. Let's assume that this lady is right. It means, but it looks like it, that it at least means that the woman was not beneath the man then. Now the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field which the Lord God had made. And he said unto the woman, yea, have God said, ye shall not eat of every tree of the garden? And the woman said to the serpent, we may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, ye shall not eat of it, neither shall ye touch it, lest ye die. And the serpent said unto the woman, ye shall not surely die. For God doth know that in the day ye eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened, and ye shall be as gods, knowing good and evil. This is written in the Shakespearean thing. I guess y'all know that, right? For God doth know that in the day ye eat of therein, your eyes shall be opened, and ye shall be as gods, knowing good and evil. And when a woman saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree to be desired to make one wise, she took of the fruit thereof, and did eat, and gave also unto her husband with her, and he did eat. So, sounds like Adam's right there, is letting everything go down, right? And the eyes of both of them were open, and they knew they were naked, and they sewed fig leaves together, and made themselves aprons. And they heard the voice of the Lord walking in the garden in the cool depth of the day. And Adam and his wife hid themselves from the presence of the Lord God amongst the trees of the garden. And the Lord God called Adam and said unto him, where art thou? And he said, I heard thy voice in the garden, and I was afraid because I was naked, and I hid myself. And he said, who told thee thou was naked? Has thou eaten of the tree which I commanded thee that thou should not eat? And the man said, the woman you gave me, the woman you gave to be with me, she gave me of the tree, and I did eat. And the Lord God said to the woman, what is this that thou hast done? And the woman said, the serpent beguiled me, and I did eat. And the Lord God said to the serpent, because thou hast done this, thou art cursed above all cattle, above every beast of the field. Upon thy belly shalt thou go, and thus shalt thou eat all the days of thy life. And I will put enmity between thee and the woman, and between thy seed and her seed, and it shall bruise thy head, and thou shalt bruise his heel. Until the woman, he said, I will greatly multiply thy sorrow and thy conception. In sorrow thou shalt bring forth children, and thy desire shall be to thy husband, and he shall rule over thee. I'm just saying. Right? Now, if you believe in the Bible, you have to, this has to have some value to you. And Adam, unto Adam, he said, because thou hearken unto the voice of thy wife, and hast eaten of the tree of which I commanded thee, saying, thou shalt not eat of it, cursed is the ground for thy sake. In sorrow shalt thou eat of it all the days of thy lives. Thorns and thistles shall it bring forth to thee, and thou shalt eat the herb of the field. In the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread until thou return unto the ground. For out of it was thou taken, for dust thou art, to dust thou shalt return. Well, so here, helpmate or the ether becomes subordinate to the man, as she is told by the Creator, thy desire shall be to thy husband, and he shall rule over thee. The woman or the ether disobeyed the Creator and encouraged man to disobey also, and part of her punishment was to be subordinate to the man. This punishment indicates that the ether's original status was not a subordinate one. By submitting to the will of the serpent, the woman Ether forfeited her capacity to help protect or aid the man. That was her role, to protect this guy, to help him, right? So she wasn't there to help him fall. That wasn't her job. From www.pewresearchreligion. The demographic study, right, based on analysis of more than 2,500 census surveys and population registers, finds that 2.2 billion Christians, 32% of the world's population, right, are Christian. 1.6 billion Muslims, 23%. Most Americans are Christian Muslim, and you have a few people of the are Christian and Muslim. Yeah, but most of them are Christian. You have some Muslim and people of the Jewish faith, mainly of the Christian faith. So I think it's something like 75% of the country that identify or possibly identify with the scripture, with this scripture in Genesis, are women included. Wikipedia says Christianity is the most prevalent religion in the United States. Estimates from 2021 suggest that the entire U.S. population, 332 million, is about 63% Christian, 210 million. So that is a direct, right? Let's say the woman is under the man. Now, it's subordinate to the man. Now, the feminists are saying they want to be on an equal playing field as the man, but sounds like the creator is saying that she's subordinate to the man's will. So maybe if it's up to the man, it's up to the man whether or not how feminists, you know, move. But the creator made her subordinate to the man, right? Not equal to him as a punishment, right? But originally it sounded like she was right there with him like that. I'm with you, Adam. I got your back. And he had her back, you know, but it's certain change, I guess, as in most relationships where you have somebody, you know, betrayal or something like that, you kind of lose faith in them. And, you know, you like a kid, you know, I can't trust you at home. So now I got to get a babysitter. Things like that. So anyway, that was just an idea about maybe how things got the way they are with men being on top and women being on the bottom as subordinates. And not take away from the fact that men just chose to do all the hard work and gave women the other hard work of raising children, having children and raising children. The creator gave her the job of having children, and rearing children is a part of reproduction, because women have produce breast milk and they feed children and wean children off like the breast milk like that. So it makes sense in a way that women are not on the same playing field as men in terms of what we do in society. So maybe they just kept on with that thing. The man goes out and gets the bacon, brings it home to the woman who's home with the child, right? And maybe that's the way they do it, because I've seen some of the old pictures, old videos of tribal people. It's always the men going out to hunt, even in these guys are just wearing loincloths. The men going out to hunt, the women is taking care of the village, stuff like that. So, and I'm sure there's probably somewhere where some women are out there doing something that a role that is normally culturally expected for a man to do. IWDA.org.au Learn says, what is feminism? Feminism means a million things to a million people, they say. So I guess there are, you know, different sex and sex, not sex like in sex, but sex like in, a, you know, groups who have different ideologies. So he said, what does feminism mean to us? Quite simply, feminism is about all genders having equal rights and opportunities, right? It's about respecting diverse women's experiences, identities, knowledge and strengths, and striving to empower all women to realize their full rights. Okay. So you got, you know, so remember, like in the United States, it's a Christian society. And I mean, a long time ago, they were really hard on women. They couldn't vote. Whole lot of things they couldn't do, you know. So things are really come up for women, especially more so for white women than black women, right? We'll get into that, right? It's about leveling the playing field between the genders. Women's rights have the same opportunities in life available to boys and men. They want women and girls to have the same opportunities in life available to boys and men. We're not the same. So that's my personal thing. We're not the same. So how can we have the same opportunities? In some cases, yes, the same opportunities, but not where it's not applicable. Just can't make a general statement like that. Where it's applicable, yes. I'm a teacher, you're a teacher. I'm a welder, you're a welder. You drive nails, I drive nails. You cut trees down, I cut trees down. You're a police officer, I'm a police officer. It seems like in some places they have, this is being observed, actually. So, I mean, it come a long way. You know, where does intersectionality come into, right? So intersectional feminism acknowledges the interplay between gender and other forms of discrimination. That means, we got all these forms of discrimination in this country, right? Like race, age, class, socioeconomic status, physical or mental ability, gender or sexual identity, religion or ethnicity. But we can argue on all of those points, some of those points, but we're not going to do that today because we never get off this page. Barriers are faced by middle-class women living in Melbourne were not the same as those of queer women living in rural Fuji. I don't know what that queer woman. Is that a woman that likes women or a woman that just, I don't, if that's a biological woman, then I don't, see, I'm getting a little mixed up when they start talking about stuff like that. I don't really know what they're talking about right there. But if I'm assuming that's a woman, she's having a problem. Well, she's going to have a problem because she's a queer woman and she's in conflict with the women. So, and tradition over there. So usually in conflict with tradition and people have a little, you know, that's a little bump in the road. You got to see if people get used to you or accept you or whatever, right? Just women aren't just exposed to sexism, racism, ageism, all the phobia, transphobia, and religious persecution. They are intrinsically linked to how they experience inequality, right? So there's a lot of things that women are exposed to, right? Can anyone be a feminist? Yes. Being a feminist simply means believing in equal rights for all genders. That's what a feminist means. It doesn't mean that you are a feminist. But it's not about hating men. It's not about women being better than men. It's not about eschewing femininity, right? So I just had a question about, like I said, about this gender thing. Do all genders refer to both genders or sexes, or does it reference more than two genders or more than two sexes? If it does reference more than two genders or two sexes, there will definitely be an argument regarding equal rights for an identified gender and a birth or biological gender or sex. That is very, is a very different battle as race, class, age, socioeconomic status, physical or mental ability, gender or sexual identity, religion, and ethnicity are very different struggles, right? And we're going to see how that impacted on black women. In fact, you could attach the term intersexual to any struggle because the identified factors, sex, race, class, age, social, economic status, physical, mental ability, gender or sexual identity, religion, ethnicity, taken into account are not totally specific or linked to any one factor, ism or so-called phobia. Intersection, the wall that black feminists ran into during their inclusion in the feminist struggle. So the article goes on to say that feminism doesn't mean one person's experience are more important than the others. Remember I said that. It's about learning and understanding the ways that inequality affect women and men, right? Acknowledging how different forms of discrimination intersect with and amplify gender-based discrimination in a critical way to ensure all women reap the benefits of women's rights. Feminist Theory by Sarah Ziegler. Feminist theory has at times challenged traditional First Amendment doctrine by emphasizing theories of equality over free expression. You know, the First Amendment, freedom of speech, right? Feminist theory argues that women should enjoy the same rights as men. Feminist theory is not readily categorized as a single branch of political thought. Women should enjoy the same political and economical rights as men, including rights to speech, religion, bodily autonomy, and political expression. See that? That's why you're not going to do anything about a woman's or have any impact on a woman's reproductive life That's her body. She knows how she feels. She has to go live her life to have that kid. And I get it. I get all that. Feminist. Radicalism gained prominence in the 1970s and the 80s. The feminist theory grew significantly in the 70s and the 80s through the scholarly work of somebody by the name of feminist legal scholar Catherine McKinnon. McKinnon adopted the anti-subordination. See that? Now, the story about in Genesis, the woman being subordinate to the man. Now, this woman comes with the anti-subordination approach to theory, contending that those laws, policies, and practices that subordinated women needed to be eliminated, in contrast to liberal feminism, which sought to bring women into a position of equality with men within the existing legal framework, right? She rejected the existing framework and hopelessly representative of the male norm. Her jurisprudence focused on results rather than process and on ending the subordination of women and other marginalized groups such as homosexual men and transgender to men. She offered background work on how sexuality reinforced male domination and sexual harassment were a form of sexism. This work influenced the current legal understanding of hostile and intimidating environments. Sexism is prejudice or discrimination based on sex or gender, especially against women and girls. That sounds kind of sexist right there. But it emerged during the second wave, I guess that's during this lady's tenure, to include the expression of any sex, including men and boys, intersex people, and transgender people. Okay? Feminist view pornography led to debates on First Amendment obscenity jurisprudence, right? So they was arguing over this pornography thing, says that the First Amendment jurisprudence on obscenity is curtailing the very real harms of pornography, right? So it's allowing people to harm, I guess, women in pornography, reinforcing women's subordination and shortcomings in pornography. So I mean, she argued that pornography contains a powerful political message of male dominance and that it, by objectifying women and eroticizing their subordination, perpetuates real harm against women. Not only does it encourage rape by implying that women enjoy forcible sex, but it also conveys the message that every woman, regardless of her ability or role in society, is a sexual object. In short, the argument is that pornography dehumanizes women and that its pervasiveness in society makes it impossible for women to combat patriarchy or fight subordination. They went on to say that that speech must be permitted. The courts went on to say that speech must be permitted, however deplorable its content. So they lost that fight. All men are created equal. They said, what about us? So the court said feminist ordinances restricting pornography violated the First Amendment. So she tried to, I don't know. She didn't try to, she made it a woman's issue, I thought that was very interesting. It reinforced subordination and other women and encouraged violence against women. So the porno movies must be, are they beating the women up in the porno movie or doing things to them that they don't like? I guess, it's that S&M or something like that. But I thought that was stuff they want done to them. People get tied up and stuff like that. And they're doing, hitting and whatever they do. I thought it was stuff that they did willingly. And I heard stories about people being forced to do things in the porno movie, in the porno business. Hell, I heard that about Hollywood. Anyway, feminists weighed in on both sides and many supporting the position and advocacy by civil liberties groups that this should take precedence, even if that speech conveyed a profoundly sexist message. The challenge, the American Book on Sellers Association versus Hudnut, was heard by the 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in 1985. The court held that the ordinance was unconstitutional because it prescribed speech that would not be considered obscene under the three-prong test established in Miller versus California in 1973. So anyway, feminists took issue with the obscenity law because they lost, right? Their primary argument being pornography did serve an underlying social and political purpose to reinforce patriarchal control of women. Modern feminists take a variety of positions on pornography, the role of pornography. Some of the more extreme claim that all heterosexual sex is rape because women cannot provide meaningful consent in the context of a patriarchal society. I thought that was weird. Some of them claim that the theories portray women as perpetual victims and fail to recognize the many gains realized by liberal feminists. That the speech must be permitted, however deplorable its content, right? That's what most mainstream feminists take that position, right? So I had to say something about some of the stuff, right? All heterosex is rape sounds more like some woman who hates men, sex with men, and men in power. Patriarchal society condemns rape. It is a distorted view. No, a delusional view of consensual sex between a man and a woman. This ideology comes from someone who hates men and may be trying to lure women into their bed. The subliminal message is a woman is forced to have sex with a man, but can only consent to having sex with a female. This theory is selectively blind to the fact that women seek men for sex. Women initiate sex, and women love sex with men. The woman who doesn't want sex with a man is probably a woman who wants to be a man or like a man or hates men or a woman who loves women. Pornography is not exclusively female, and females have volunteered or sought employment in the field. It is all sexual exploitation and abuse of male or female, willing or unwilling. Fact is, it's legal. If feminists want to eliminate pornography, good luck with that. You have to have tunnel vision only to see the subordination of women and encourage violence against them, because pornography, whatever happened to a woman, and it can happen to a man. I mean, all of it. You understand what I'm saying? Outside of, you know, men don't have vaginas and stuff like that. But you could be abused, and a man could be abused in a pornography skit or whatever you call it. NBC News said things are looking up in America's porn industry. Globally, porn industry is a $97 billion industry. They think they're going to stop that? I think not. Present between 10 and 12 billion of that come from the United States. And I'm going to tell you, money talks here and all that ism walks. That's out the door. There's a demand for it, apparently. There's a large demand for it, whether it's shrinking or not. They say it's been shrinking in the last several years, but there's demand for it. Anyway. From the New York Times by Brent Staples. He said, the suffrage heroes, that's the people, the feminists, right? Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony seized control of the feminist narrative of the 19th century. Anyway, they went on to say that the narrative in the sixth volume, History of Women's Suffrages, betrays more than a hint of vanity credits. Susan B. Anthony cohort with starting a movement that actually had diverse origins and many mothers. Its worst offense may be that it rendered nearly invisible the black women who labored
in the sufferer's vineyard and that looked away from the racism that tightened his grip on the fight for the women's vote in the years after the Civil War. So these are white women, right? Basically turn their backs on one of the black women who participated in the suffrages, the protests and, you know, the struggle for women's rights. That and the campaign's principal philosopher is exposed as a classic liberal racist who embraced fairness in the abstract while publicly enunciating bigoted views of African-American men whom she characterized as sambos and incipient racists in the period just after the war. Acquiescing to white supremacy and selling out the interests of African-American women when it became politically expedient to do so in their favor, right? This betrayal of trust opened a rift between black and white feminists that persists to this day, right? So the white feminists, right? These are the liberal. She's a liberal racist. And I've heard about people talk about the liberals being racist today with the politician. Well, here we have she's a politician now. What's her name? Stanton. Right, the principal philosopher of the feminist movement of this time. She basically threw black people and black women who were in league, right, in the struggle with them under the bus. This toxic legacy looms especially large as cities, including New York, prepare monuments and educational programs to celebrate the centennial of the 19th Amendment ratified in 1920, which barred the state from denying voting rights based on gender. Black feminists in particular are eager to see if these remembrances own up to the real history of the fight for the vote and whether black suffragists appear in them. Hey, you think that these people are going to say that in their movement they were racist toward black folks and black women who were in the movement with them? I think black feminists are just asking a little bit too much. You know, I understand it, but you asking a little too much here. You just like that. You want somebody to admit to a crime. People don't. Well, I did. I should do a show on that, too. People are admitting to crimes on the web, on the internet, like crazy. Anyway, archives.government to the 15th Amendment to the Constitution, Voting Rights, 1970, right? Said February 8th, 2020, passed by Congress, February 26th, 1869, and ratified February 3rd, 1870. The 15th Amendment granted African-American men the right to vote. Now, that's a hell of that. To me, that's a hell of a move right there, considering that the white woman wasn't able to vote, but they granted the African-American. That means that white men valued the vote of black men more than they valued the vote of white women, of the white woman. The political bond between men is greater than the political bond between the white man and his white woman. Does that mean that? Why would a white supremacist give voting power to black men before giving it to white women? A white woman can't vote, but a slave or descendant of a slave can? I can see where that could be an insult to a white woman. Could this have been what spurned the feminist movement? It was already there, but I'm saying, could that like piss them off even more? Could that added fire to it? Anyway, the famous suffrage convention in Cynthia Falls in New York, 1848, featured Stanton and her partner in arms, Lucretia Mott, in addition to the towering figure of Frederick Douglass. Yes, Frederick Douglass, right? The orator, right? The abolitionist, right? where they said were not for Frederick Douglass oratory speaking skills, right? Like Martin Luther King blasting it out up there, right? The historian Lisa Tetrault tells us in The Myth of Senesa Falls, the controversial resolution demanding the vote for women might actually have failed. They saying this brother speaking was so powerful that they believe that's what got him over. He had a dream before Martin, right? Born into slavery in February 1818, Frederick Douglass, 1818 to 1895. Fred was about 30 years at the Senesa Falls, New York convention. So these white she-devils used and exploited the talents of Frederick Douglass while forwarding their racist agenda against black women and men who supported them in the struggle for all women's rights. What a stab in the back. I guess black people are kind of used to getting stabbed in the back. Maybe old Biden ain't really doing nothing that hasn't been done before. So he's probably shrugging his shoulder. What's wrong with them? Anyway, it became clear after the Civil War that black and white women had different views of why the right to vote was essential. White women were seeking the vote as a symbol of equality with their husbands and brothers. Black women, most of whom lived in the South, were seeking the ballot for themselves and their men as a means of empowering black communities, seized by the reign of racial terror that erupted after the emancipation. The tension escalated after the run-up to the 15th Amendment, a provision that barred the states from denying Negro men. See, it got worse. They got mad at, oh, what? You don't let these ninjas vote, and you're not going to let me vote? And I gave birth to you. We gave birth to you. Right? So Stanton instead embarked on a Ku Klux Klan triad against the amendment. She warned that white women would be degraded if Negro men preceded them into the franchise. Woo! Historian Lori Ginsburg argues persuasively that racism and elitism were enduring features of the great suffragist makeup and philosophy. So these people were not just racist, they were elitists. And you know who was at the bottom of the poll, who not even elite in this country, right? And especially back then, right? Maybe these black women thought it wise to ride the wave of female white power in a society where white power reigns supreme to gain political power for black people. That's maybe that, you know, maybe they didn't even trust these people. They didn't think that they would just overtly just throw them under the bus like that. I get it. Who did they think raised these white supremacists anyway? Why did black women in Frederick Douglass trust that they would be viewed as equal to white America during a time when they were overtly discriminated against? Exploiting black people is as old as America. The colonists offered blacks freedom in the Revolutionary War. The North offered blacks freedom in the Civil War. Though black people have made some gains, that did not stop white folks from oppressing, lynching, raping, incarcerating, and disenfranchising black folks in America. What was Fred and the sisters of the feminist movement thinking about? That goes with choosing your mate wisely, your friends wisely, right there. See, but these guys got in bed with the devil and hope that these devils wouldn't throw them under the bus. And they threw them under the bus. Frederick Douglass thrown under the bus by the white feminist movement. So similarly, the historian Faye Dutton wrote that Stanton dipped her pen into a tincture of white racism and sketched a reference to a nightmarish figure, a black rapist, and lashed out from the pages of the sufferer's paper that she and Anthony published. Susan B. Anthony, right? She's going to Was she on a dollar? Something? She on something. Her message that the passage of the 15th Amendment would mean only degradation for white, for women at the hands of the Negro men. Ooh, you take those ninjas over us? Must have cheered the Ku Klux Klan as it terrorized the Black South. Mm. So, back to the provocative thought. Historically, there appears to be a practice of demonizing the Black man and inciting the fears of white folks to achieve a specific outcome. We had Red Summer when Black towns were destroyed all over America in 1919. Then there's that Emmett Till type thing, and I think that was 1955, or that thing where a white man accuses a Black man of raping or attempting to rape a white woman, and then there's that thing when you just happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time and end up swinging from a tree. White supremacy dictates that white people, male and female, are superior to Black people. No one knows that more in America than Black folk in America. So that Red Summer, that was in 1919, a spike of racial violence, much of it directed toward the African-American veterans returning home from Europe, because they were treated different in Europe. The white people in Europe weren't as racist as the people here in America, right? They had the Lane Massacre. They said that was the worst one. Over 100 African-Americans were killed. Racial violence in the Red Summer erupted in many other southern locations as well in the north, most notably Chicago, a reaction to northern whites to the large influx of African Americans into northern cities during the Great Migration. For you folks that think that the North was so great. Douglas was, that just means that the South was so hellish that the North was better. The pain they're putting on Black folks in the North was better than the tyranny they was going through in the South. That's what that means. Anyway, back to the story. Douglas was clearly wounded by what he described as the employment of certain names such as Sambo and the Gardner and the Bootlack and the rest, but gracefully declined to answer insult with insult. Douglas, but he was straight up. See, this dude's something else. Boy, he held his tongue because I know he cussed. See, but he said, nah, I ain't gonna let him bend me out of shape. He summarized in dramatic fashion the differences between the interests of Black and white suffragists, right, and the case for federal protection of Black voters. When women, because they are women, he said, are hunted down through the cities of New York, New Orleans, right? New York North, New Orleans South. When they are dragged from their houses and hung upon lampposts, and their children are torn from their arms, and their brains are dashed out upon the pavement, when they are objects, insult and outrage at every turn, when they are in danger of having their homes burnt down over their heads, when their children are not allowed to enter schools, then they will have an urgency to obtain the ballot equal to our own. Douglas cut to the central fallacy of the white suffragist push that African-American women could magically separate their Blackness from their femaleness. So the feminist movement has racist origins, as do many things in the U.S. have. Omar Johnson has a historical point because he was saying that. They try to knock Omar Johnson for saying stuff, but not biting his tongue, not coating, candy coating stuff. Black people need to unite together in their struggle for equal rights in America. Piggybacking on the agenda of white females proved to be a slap in the face and a kick in the groin. How is that working for Black women in the feminist movement presently? The 15th Amendment was, of course, ratified. Women would wait another 50 years for the 19th. Racism intensified amongst suffragists as they neared their goals. Racism intensified amongst suffragists, the feminist movement, right? The white-led feminist movement, right? As they got closer to getting what they want, the more racist they became, they said. African-American luminaries like the noted anti-lynching crusader Ida B. Wells and the civil rights leader Mary Cho Terrell became more deeply and publicly engaged. As in other instances, suffragists outside of the South used the racism in the Jim Crow states as an excuse for their discriminatory treatment of their black suffragist sisters. Black women suffragists clubs that sought formal affiliation with the national white suffrage movement were discouraged from doing so on the grounds that admitting them might anger white Southerners. It has since become clear that this was a ruse Northern whites used to obscure their own discriminatory policies. The most blatant example of accommodationalism came in 1913 when organizers of a huge suffrage parade in Washington demanded that black participants march in an all-black assembly in the back of the parade instead of with the state delegations. Wells famously refused. Terrell, who marched in a colored delegation as requested, believed at the time that the white suffragists would exclude black women from the 19th Amendment, nicknamed the Anthony Amendment, if they thought they could get away with it. These episodes fueled within the African-American community a lasting suspicion of white suffragists and of the very idea of political cooperation across racial lines. Well, I don't understand that. I'm surprised they would trust white people that much back in that day. And I'm not saying you can't trust white people, but I'm saying I definitely wasn't trusting a bunch of white folks back. And y'all still calling me nigga to my face, hanging up people, taking pictures of about 100, 200 people out there, nobody getting arrested. And those these kind of days, they burning out whole white towns, flooding out white towns. And I'm sorry. I don't know. I have a problem with that. They said the 19th African-American women streamed in to register. Southern officials merely stepped up the level of fraud and intimidation as the African-Americans streamed in to register for voting. So, as you know, I mean, historically, they voted, you know, they blocking black people from voting. Even they had the right to vote. You know, they had all kinds of stuff stop you from voting. By this time, former suffragists of the North were celebrating the amendment and were uninterested in fighting discrimination against women who were suffering racial as opposed to gender discrimination. So the 19th Amendment was passed, and when black women were still being blocked, they ain't getting no help. As historian Rosalind Tibor Penn writes, within a few years, white supremacy was victorious throughout the South. Unlike black men who had been disenfranchised within 20 years after the ratification of the 15th Amendment, black women had lost the vote in less than a decade. It would take another half century and a new suffrage campaign with black women in a leading role. Before the black community was fully enfranchised through the Voting Rights Act of 1965. So racism clearly played a central role in the origins and practices of early feminism. Racism intensified among the suffragists as they neared their goals. All I can say is that they got it honestly, and sometimes the enemy of your enemy is not your friend. Historically, white women used, exploited, and discriminated against black women. The author calls it accommodationism. I call it racism or business as usual in America. From Pew Research, blacks adults say feminism had a significant impact on women's rights. Despite the history of tension, about 3/4 of black adults, 76% of the people surveyed say feminist movement has done a lot to advance women's rights in the U.S. This includes 28% who say the feminist movement has done a great deal to advance the rights, and 48 say it has done a fair amount. Much smaller shares say that feminist movement hasn't done much, 17%. Nothing at all, 6%. And I'm going to skip all that right there. So the question is, do black women receive equal treatment under the law as practiced in America? Hell no. Ask Sandra Bland, Breonna Taylor. But you can't. They're dead. It seems like if it is something that a woman or a woman wants from men, it gets labeled feminism. Nothing wrong with wanting equal pay for equal work. That makes sense. How a man functions with a woman is not feminism. It's called a relationship. How many women want the equal opportunities, responsibilities, and expectation as men? How many want that? It's bad enough males are drafted during wartime and placed on the front line. Equal treatment under the law would mean women are drafted and placed on the front lines also. How many women want that? Women would be no longer protected, right? There'd be no more protecting women. A woman, you can't protect her. You don't have to protect her from aggression, from a female or a male, because she is a woman. She's equal. So she has the same expectation as a man. Handle your business. She will handle her business just like a man would, because she's equal. No more opening doors. No more pulling out chairs. Ladies going first, paying for dates, picking up women for dates, even being observant of subject matter and language because a woman is present. Being the provider because she's equal. She can provide. No more taking the lead when an intruder is suspected of being in the home. She can handle it because she's equal. Is that what they want? Should women in the WNBA earn as much as men in the NBA? Is it the same job? Yet WNBA players earn much less. Or should they be allowed to play in the NBA? Do women want the perks of both worlds? Just how far does this equality thing go? What is all the fuss about? From bookings. As I said, you know, there's the 19th Amendment was especially significant for black women who, despite the 15th Amendment's promise of voting rights regardless of race, still could not vote because of their gender. To secure black women's right to vote underscores how both race and gender have always mattered in significant ways when it comes to women of color. That's why they had to have their own movement. They had to lead their own movement. That's a message. Ain't that saying you can't get help from white people? I'm just saying you need to lead your own. You need to do your own work. Be at the forefront of your own war. Time is 9:18. So it was always a race game. I don't want to skip this shit part because they went on a statistic to reveal the result of factors including but not limited to motherhood penalties, gender discrimination, and occupational segregation. Women make 79 cents for every dollar men earn. Black women earn only 64 cents on the dollar, and the Latinas, it was a dismal 54 cents. Women of color continue to experience occupational and economic disadvantages that reflect the ways both race and gender affect their work experience. So it was always a race game. That 79 cent must be white women's cut. Black people, as usual, are used as pawns to achieve an objective. Why are black women who are a part of a women's equality movement still experiencing some occupational and economic disadvantages? And white women are not experiencing occupational and economical disadvantages at the same rate. It is simple, because they are not white. White women deserve more, so they get more. The black woman's struggle will always be tied to the struggle of black men. They are in it together, whether they think so or not, whether they unite or not, whether they act together or not. The statistics indicate that the race card is still being played, and it trumps all cards. Black women's labor market history reveals deep-seated race and gender discrimination. Black women experience in America, arguably the most overwhelming evidence of the persistent of ongoing drag from gender and race discrimination on the economic fate of workers and females and families. Black women's labor market position is a result of employer practices and government policies that disadvantage black women relative to white women and men. Negative representations of black womanhood have reinforced these discriminatory practices and policies. Since the era of slavery, the dominant view of black women has been that they should be workers, a view that contributes to their devaluation as mothers with caring needs at home. But they always got these jobs caring for white folks' kids. You understand what I'm saying? So they said they devalue them as mothers to their own children, but they have been most likely of all women to be employed in low-wage women's jobs that involve cooking, cleaning, caregiving, even though this work is associated with mothering more broadly. I've seen this thing from everydayfeminism.com. Talked about what we need to do to discuss what we need to discuss the notion that black men don't get to have feelings. I don't know where they get that from. Black men have feelings. I'm a black man. I have feelings. So I don't know where they're getting that from. But they said, what can black men do to have a different experience? He can start by having more conversations with boys in his community about the right to feel. He can talk more openly amongst his friends about how something made him feel. He can read to gain insight from other black men working to challenge the realities of emotionally oppressed black men. First, it's a life and death situation nowadays. It would be nice if we could intervene on behalf of a female. Sometimes we're lucky and sometimes we suffer under the consequences of our actions. Sometimes we do not act to save our lives. It is a roll of the dice if you should intervene. If your intervention will be successful or if you will become a victim or perpetrator resulting from your intervention. That's why some people do not intervene. Everybody is not watching their mother get beat by their father. It's funny. They had I skipped something. But I just wanted to get to that. Oh, yeah, they're talking about they could speak to their fathers about what they saw, nor could they speak to their mothers about what she experienced. They move on to develop other ways to cope with unexpected emotion. Talking about boys, we've seen our mothers get beat up. Therefore, we being influenced by that. That's why we don't intervene and stuff like that. So this was my response to that. So everybody is not watching their mothers get beat by their father. It's funny. There's always been a rule not to hit girls, but until we stop hitting each other and giving people a reason to hit us, violence will continue to be a tool used in defense of our emotions. Just because you don't see tears doesn't mean that there is no pain or being hurt. All my life, I have been listening to black men express their feelings in the flesh and in the media. Who is the genius that thinks that black men don't feel? How delusional. People are dying because of feelings. What black males need is social, psychological, spiritual, moral, and ethical way out of the black hole we have dug ourselves into. That will probably look different for many individuals. So they're trying to say that black men are emotionally depressed. Feminist is anybody who believes and supports the equal opportunities for women. So, I don't think that's what that is. So people try to put everything in a category, in a box. can't put anybody in a box, right? Siding with feminist theory implies that there is a theory that is against feminists and or women if you believe feminism represents all women. A woman who makes a decision for herself that takes in account her specific needs as a woman isn't siding with anyone but herself. It doesn't make her a feminist. It makes her accommodating her special needs. When making a decision that impacts on someone else, she is accommodating the special needs of the person or group of people. Harriet Tubman, for instance. A husband's choice to cook dinner most nights is not an act of feminism. It is simply a husband's choice based on the environment in the home. Maybe he likes to cook. Maybe he is the better cook. Maybe she isn't at home in time to cook. Maybe she doesn't have time to cook. A husband's choice to cook is a husband's choice to cook. It's called teamwork. Cooking is not masculine or feminine. Remember, traditional roles are supported by traditional roles in and outside of the home. Like any role, they work best when both parties are in agreement. What can a black man do to better ally to his female partner, they ask. Are you deciding what your partner, what your wife or girlfriend can or cannot wear? You're a man and you know how men think. Tell them that bitches are fictional characters in songs and music videos so that they should not assume that the term is applicable to women in real life as a term of endearment or attraction. So I had to say something about that. I'm going to assume that clothing refers to sexually exploitative dress. Challenge anyone to explore their sexist behavior, male and female. It is not just about how men think, it's about how women think also. If you seek to resolve an issue of sexism, you need to address both sources. Bitches are not fictional characters. Bitch is a term describing a female doll, cowardly person, a woman with a nasty attitude, and yes, a female is sometimes referred to as a bitch. Lately, women refer to each other as bitches. I'm thinking it's considered a term of endearment. Bitch also means to complain. Fact is, none of this is make-believe. So talk to your sons and daughters because they both use the term and expression. We're running out of time. In closing, I just want to say, go to the end of the show. And I'm not going to even have time to go to the end of the show. This show, I had a lot to say. I'm sorry. I just want to thank everybody for calling in, listening in, anybody who downloaded this show. Thank you very much. And just take this with you. Take what is useful and disregard what you cannot use. Let no one's movement separate you from your people, your struggle, and your objective. Race is still an issue impacting on black lives and livelihoods. At some point, we must become one, you and me and you, together. For the benefit of our people, men and women, young and old, rich and poor. On that note, I'm going to say good night, y'all. Peace out.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the shape of a war theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Detroit from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Green Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry Hahn, woman liberationist, and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.